College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Tullo. I am JP John Polish from the two-man power trip of wrestling. And of course, joining me as always is the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, former NWA Florida World Heavyweight Champion, of course, one of the greatest minds and bookers in professional wrestling history, Mr. Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster, the Games Master, the devil himself. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Doing great, John. How are you?
Doing very good. I can't complain. Now, I think the best addition to the Dungeon of Doom would be in 95, well, Fall Brawl 95, really, when the giant, Paul White, makes his debut, comes down, snaps Hogan's neck, saves you from the 5 minutes alone of you getting your ass kicked. I was like, first of all, this guy's a giant. Second of all, he looks great. Third of all, is he really related to Andre? And then fourth was like, this guy is just huge monster, but athletic as hell. The way he just jumped over the rope, you're like, Jesus Christ, who is this guy? So that was so interesting. Where did he kind of come from? Did Hogan bring him in from the Monster Factory? How was he kind of brought in?
Wasn't in the Monster Factory. Somehow, and I probably don't have the story right, but this is the legend. Somehow Paul was playing basketball in a minute league around Chicago, and Jimmy Hart and Hulk ran into him when they saw him. And at that time, Paul had a manager, and the manager came up to him, and Hulk saw him and said, I mean, hey, at that period, WrestleMania 3, wasn't it Hogan and him, the biggest of all times, Andre and Hogan?
Yes.
So, hey, he thought he was hit, you know, lightning strikes twice.
Yeah, and really, if you think about it, I mean, the Giant, obviously green as hell at this point, but wow, did he have potential. I mean, like that mold of clay, it's like you don't get 7 foot plus guys that in shape and like that athletic. Right? I mean, he's a freak of nature.
Oh, yeah, and he was really athletic. That was the thing. And the other thing is, don't forget this, John, how young he was.
Yeah.
When was he back then? 23, 24?
I think it was like 23. Yeah, super, super young and new to the business. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And he got a push, you know, obviously right away. His debut is the, you know, beating up the biggest star of all time and, you know, snapping his neck. Is that kind of, you know, can you get any more grandiose than the debut, than beating up Hulk?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. And I think, you know, that was Hulk's idea. I mean, he knew what – here's the thing. Maybe I've been sounding hard on Hulk. First of all, Hulk knows what draws money. He's a Florida boy. Mm-hmm. He watched Biddy's television program, so he knew what draw money.
Mm-hmm.
He drew money with Andre, and he drew money with Paul. And with Paul, it wasn't hard because of what you said. You're watching that as a kid, and you see this – supposedly 7'3" or 7'4" guy jump over and snap Hogan's neck. That's how you get somebody over. He got him over. And they drew money, big money, for a guy that hadn't had... How many matches did he have before the first pay-per-view? Four? Five?
Yeah, it was very little. Yeah,
very little. And... you know, I got to give Hulk credit on that. You know, sometimes people don't give Hulk credit being smart. He's a very smart. He couldn't have not been very smart if he didn't know how to draw money. He was very smart, and he knew what worked. You know, and I think he knew what didn't work, too, but he had to feel comfortable. That was the main thing. Like, he felt that he got screwed in the AWA, and I think that stuck with him. And he knew, you know, you got to remember, he left New York. I don't know what the story was, but he could never have left New York, right? And never had the run in WCW, but he just knew what was right for him. You know, his famous line, "It doesn't work for me, brother."
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And I feel like with the Giant, obviously the next pay-per-view, that Halloween Havoc 95, which we can get into at another time, because it's so much going on with the monster trucks at the top of the building and this and that. But basically, you know, the gist of it, Jimmy Hart turns heel on Hogan. Does it make more sense to him as a heel? Kind of, he made no sense with Hogan, right?
I never thought, first of all, I've never been a big babyface manager. I mean, what do they do? You got to keep beating them up. You know what I mean? And that gets repetitious. And Jimmy was a great heel manager in Memphis. Jimmy was my manager in Memphis when I was in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Jimmy is a tremendous manager as his heel. He didn't need to be with Hulk. You know what I mean? And that's really, and then there's, you know, you got to turn there. There's a story there. Jimmy turning on Hulk.
Yep.
You know? And people forget that Jimmy was a heel manager in New York.
And if you think about it, the Giant, like you said, he's so green, he's so young, literally almost too new to the business, but he's such a big clump of clay and such a big, massive potential. He needs a manager. So, right, Jimmy Hart's the perfect manager for him?
Right, right. And the other thing is, Jimmy was a slight guy. You know what I mean? He isn't a big guy. And the contrast of size worked perfectly.
Yep. Now, what about the Yeti, as Tony Schiavone likes to call him, the Yeti? Ron Rees makes his debut. Was it supposed to be somebody else? I always heard a rumor like they were thinking about making, if the Warrior was available, it could have been Warrior. If Yoko was available, it could have been Yoko. Was it always going to be Ron Rees under some horrible toilet paper costume?
I have no idea how Ron got there. I knew that he was promoted from the camp. And the other thing is, you got to realize Hulk's thing was beating big guys in New York, right?
Yep.
He saw another big guy and he thought, well, we'll throw this. I don't know where the gimmick came from. And I'm not saying I may have come up with it, but I know you would have thought that. I'm going to say somebody's thinking process is there's another big guy to go after Hogan. But we got to wrap him up in something because we can't have him look exactly like Paul. Paul has just got tights and boots on, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to an extreme. And, you know, he was Ron was a very nice guy. I think that he was saddled with a gimmick that was impossible to get over. And he was still green when he came to TV.
Did you think eventually, as the Giant continues his feud with Hogan, did you think, you know, they put the title on him, obviously, then they take it off and say there's, you know, the controversy because of the contract signed by Jimmy Hart, that the DQ, you become the winner. It was all this confusion. So World War III, Savage wins. He becomes the world champion. Hogan technically doesn't go over the rope. He goes under. And they do that whole kind of funny gimmick where Hogan goes to see the tape, brother, and the tape is destroyed when they go to watch it. So that's kind of funny. So then there's tension, of course, with him and Savage. Did you think that Hogan Giant was the right thing? And did you think that maybe too much too soon for the big man?
At this time, if you're going to make an impact, you got one chance to make a first impression. And what would you have done with them? Built them up like we did Goldberg? I don't think so. I think that Hulk wanted it right away, and he knew he could work around his shortcomings, and I think, personally, I think he made the right decision to go with him right away. Because longer he stayed out there, he would have been exposed by other people. And, you know, here's the other thing. John, can you hold on 1 second?
Yep. Okay. No problem. So as we're talking here about the Dungeon of Doom with Kevin, he'll be back in just 1 second, talking about the Dungeon of Doom here. And it's just one of those things where it's like the Giant was feuding with Hogan, but they also had Macho Man Randy Savage feuding with Ric Flair at this point, which is a much more realistic angle. Miss Elizabeth will turn heel on Macho Man, align herself with Flair. It becomes much more real. Hogan at this point was feuding with the Giant, and a little bit of a cartoony thing. Me and Kevin were just talking about Halloween Havoc. That whole thing with the Yeti was very, very cartoony and very bad. The monster truck rally at the top of the building was one of those things where it's like, that's not really believable and corny and it's kind of bad. Hogan knocks the Giant off the building. You think the Giant's dead. He comes back out later in the night and they still have the match. Very, very campy, very cartoony. Didn't really particularly work, I think, very well at that point in time. Did not really enjoy it. I enjoyed much of the other things that were going on in WWE. The tension with Luger and Sting, with Luger being a heel and Sting being a babyface, but Luger aligning himself with Jimmy Hart and kind of half aligning himself with the Dungeon of Doom. You had Ric Flair, like I just mentioned, feuding with Savage, but it's much more realistic. I mean, they're talking about, I know they weren't married at this point in real life, but and storyline wise, you think Savage and Elizabeth are married. So one of those things. But as we welcome Kevin back in, Kevin, as you were saying with the Giant and the Hulkster, that, you know, do you think that that feud worked? You're saying basically it worked because it wasn't overexposing the Giant, who may have gotten overexposed as green.
Yeah, because, you know, here's the thing. You know, I'm not going to bring up the specific match, but I booked Goldberg one time and on the streak, and he got exposed, and I didn't Regal? Want that. Yeah.
Regal.
I didn't want that. Yeah, I didn't want that happen to the Giant, because you never know. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that guys are doing it intentionally? They think it's a way to get a guy over that goes a little bit longer. You don't do that with somebody so green like Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And he's drawn big, huge money the rest of his career, so I think he started off the right way, and he's going to end it the right way.
Now, I was briefly saying here that I like the other things going on in WWE, much more realistic. Savage versus Flair and Elizabeth turning and that whole thing, that was very realistic, very hit home, very a little bit of shoot in there, too, with Elizabeth and Randy. I like Sting and Luger. That was awesome. Sting's the babyface, Luger's the heel. Luger kind of loosely with Jimmy Hart and the Dungeon of Doom, but he's still best friends with Sting. I thought that was really well done. How cool was it, or did you think how well it worked? I love it. Still to this day, I love that feud. Not really a feud. It's like the team of Sting and Luger, but Luger is a heel. He's aligned with Jimmy Hart. He's aligned with the Dungeon of Doom, kind of. Is that just clever writing? But he's Sting's best friend.
I think that was the best Luger ever was portrayed. He just hit that spot perfectly because it was close to his personality at the time. And that, to me, makes a good story when you have somebody close to their personality.
Yes. Yep.
And Luger played that excellent, and Sting did too. That's one of my most proudest moments, I think, and that people don't bring that up much. Luger was terrific then. Terrific. It gave him another dimension that he never had before, and I believe after, that people was, and they were enjoying his bullshit, you know, making excuses and, oh, glad you're here. You know, I'm sorry I'm late, you know. He was just so dead on, and they did a magnificent job. And I would love to go back and look at the ratings and see when their segment came on. I'm going to take a wild guess and say they drew a quarter of WWF at the time's audience off of Raw. When people don't understand, John, how over that segment was when Luger and Sting did it, because it was so refreshing. And I got that idea when I was a babyface and Austin Idol was a heel, and Jim Barnett, this was his idea. Idol had turned babyface, and all the babyfaces accept him except me. I wouldn't accept them. And he was wrestling Mark Lewin, and they had me go out like I was going to the concession stand in the arena. And Abdullah came down and jumped on Austin, and the people actually pushed me to the ring. And I used to make my interviews saying, I can't believe every time I get up in the morning and look in the mirror and see what I'll do for money to be this guy's partner. So I just tweaked it a little, and they were so, so good. I thought some nights they carried the whole 2 hours.
Yep.
They were fabulous.
Loved it. It's so funny. Luger would use the roller quarters and then, and knock out Harlem Heat. They win a tag titles, whatever. And then Sting would be like, what the hell is this? You'd be like, I don't know. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
And then the fans would try to touch Luger, yeah, and Sting would be looking and he'd give him the five. And as soon as Sting would turn his back, he'd be like, don't touch me. Oh, gross. Fans. Like, so good.
Yeah. And he played that so well, you know? And Lex, you know, sometimes gets a bad rap. And I never, ever had any resistance from Lex Luger a finish, an angle. Of course, like everybody else, he'd question some things, but I mean, never a problem. He gets a bad rap. Not everybody could work like Eddie Guerrero.
Right.
And I'm not comparing to Eddie Guerrero, but Luger, what he might have lacked sometimes in punching ability and stuff like that, he made up for his presence. And in this episode, I think he did an incredible job. Incredible.
Luger is underrated to me. I think he's awesome. People are like, oh, he's not a great worker. That's not really as important. He could be good in spurts, especially when he had the right opponent. He could be great, but it's not really important. He had a presence, charisma, the look, the way he acted, the way he carried himself. He just, as soon as you look at the guy, you're like, this guy, he's somebody. He's a star. Love Luger. When he beats Hogan, going off the beaten path here, when he beats Hogan in 97 for the title, that crowd goes nuts. I mean, it was awesome. What a moment for Nitro.
Right.
And now, just
people don't understand how over he was.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him putting the rack on Flair in Baltimore, but he had bled.
And the yes. People were
crazy, but the athletic commission in Baltimore allowed blood. I had to talk to the head of the athletic commission to get that passed. Because usually he would stop immediately with blood.
Right,
and the guy's
right.
Name was Professor O'Sullivan. And I had to go up to him and beg. He said, well, I'm going to have my guys leave early. But this is the last time you'll ever do this. I said, okay, thank you. But, I mean, Luger doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Totally agree. Now, just kind of just a random thought, and I was just thinking about this because we skipped over him. Not that he's important to this specific story, but Evad Sullivan, Dave Sullivan, Originally the Equalizer, he does kind of look like you, obviously like a taller version of you. Dave Sullivan, where did this Evad, you know, with the rabbit and everything, where does this gimmick in this character come from? Very silly, very cartoonish, very 1980s.
That was before I even got in the territory. They had made him, I think they had made him Evad before I got there. And he was talking about his big brother coming in. Oh, he's got big hands, he's got big feet, he's so big, he's so big, he's so big. And again, he was a baby face and I was a heel because I've been in Atlanta for a lot of time, off and on. And the Nasty Boys were beating him up and I came to the ring and I threw fire on them, and that's how we went with the angle.
Yeah, that angle's awesome. Yep.
Yeah, and you know, him and Hogan, he became the number one Hulkamaniac. So,
why? They had nothing like that's what they wanted for him.
I think it was to show you could never do this in today's day, but you know, he was supposedly, you know, dyslexic and a little slow, and it was showing that Hulk had compassion. You know, he was a Hulkamaniac, and Hulkamaniacs come in all shapes, sizes, and colors. So that's what
I believe he became a pretty good football coach. I believe in college football ranks.
Nebraska, right?
I think so. Yeah, I know he's big into football, and he's big into football equipment. He was doing something with the equipment too.
Really? Good guy.
So just moving along, just another random guy that joins the Dungeon of Doom, kind of. Loch Ness, Haystacks Jr., I guess, really. Where the heck did he come from? You just got him from England, I guess? You're like, oh, he fits the group?
Huge star in England, okay? I booked him on a Saturday night, and he drew, I forget who he worked with, he drew a 4-5, the biggest Saturday night we had that year. He had drawn, he was called Giant Haystacks in England. And if you ask the English guys, Regal and Finley and those guys,
yep,
they'll tell you he drew nothing but huge money in England. And at this time, I started to look around, what is missing with WCW? There was the international flair. Because after that, when I brought Conan in, he helped me get Rey Mysterio and open the doors for the Luchadors. And Regal mentioned Fit Finley, and Terry Funk told me he was one of the five best workers he ever saw. So I brought him in, and, you know, I wanted to give the show a international flair, but to legitimize the international stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We had like, and then I kind of mockered it with Regal, who did a tremendous job with Bobby Eaton, right?
Yes. You
know, Sir Bobby Eaton. And
the Earl of Eaton.
And John, if you remember, back in the day, everybody was some from Singapore or parts unknown or whatever. So I wanted to make it legit. And I thought just by adding legitimacy to where somebody came from, it also added a legitimacy to the business.
Yeah. Now, as far as like the Dungeon of Doom at this point, they're going to then team up with the Four Horsemen, and you and Arn, I mean, we'll talk more in detail about a lot of this stuff in future episodes, but basically the alliance to end Hulkamania. Is this almost like, wow, you need 20 guys to beat Hulk and Savage, and, you know, maybe a little bit of Sting and his friend? Like, is that almost overkill? Is that crazy, or is that making Hogan comfortable?
It was making Hogan comfortable, but I knew at this time I had to get the baby faces hot, because I didn't know what was coming, but I knew around the corner I was going to dump all kinds of heat on the heels. So I'm a heel booker, and I said, you know, you can't be a knight in shining armor killing salamanders. You have to slay dragons.
Right.
So I got to get these guys, you know, before me, they had been doing 50-50 booking. And I said, okay, we got to polish the armor up. We got to take their swords and grind them down. And let's get these guys up and running before we make the heel turn.
The Alliance then Hulkamania then adds in Z Gangsta, which is Tiny Zeus Lidster Zeus, and the Ultimate Solution, Zeet Swenson. I mean, just... these two mammoth freaking guys. Was that just totally 80s? I mean, where do they come from? Did you bring them in? Like, who's bringing them in? I mean, that seems like a little bit at a time, at a touch.
Well, it was not just a little out of touch. What do those two guys have in common, John? You know?
Both movie stars, right? Technically? We're both gigantic?
Both what you said, but the first thing, you hit it on the head. What was Hulk doing at that time?
Trying to get in the movies.
What did Jeep Swenson work with? Arnold, right?
Arnold, yeah, yep.
Okay, what did Jesse Ventura work with?
Arnold, yeah.
Was there a little thing between Jesse and Hulk?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Interesting. And obviously, he knows Zeus, no holds barred, feuded with him in WWF.
What? Which was what? A movie produced by the WWE, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
That's where,
you know, it's just almost like, wow. So Hogan and Savage are in this cage match at Uncensored. This, you know, the Terror Dome, the tower cage, the three tiered cage. It's just like almost unbelievable. I know you try to put their back up against the wall and no one thinks they're going to win. They end up winning, but it's one of those things where it's like, wow. I mean, we'll get into this on a further episode in further detail, but I, as a fan, I was like, okay, I liked, Sting and Booker against the Road Warriors, whatever, you know, whatever else is going on that night. But I was like, that, I don't know about that.
No, that was, and no disrespect to Hulk, but I think he was on a fishing expedition.
Hmm.
That he also could bring guys from the movies into his world.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, I know they're only going to be there for a short time, but I wonder if he actually thought like that would be something that would just help him out or help the Dungeon of Doom, or was it primarily just like, okay, I'm just going to beat these two monsters and we're just going to move on to the next one. I need some more, like you said, I need some more dragons to slay.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, he knew what worked for him. He had a formula. Big guys, ISO, I hulk up, I drop the leg. And he knew what worked for him. And when you get comfortable, and I always say this, and if someone's listening to us that's a booker, the worst thing you can do is fall into patterns, because it's a way to burn out quickly. And sometimes you should put your best match you got on first. Don't save it to last. Put it on first. Make the people come say, oh, gee, we missed that last week. But he fell into a pattern that worked, and you cannot knock it because it drew millions of dollars. But it was, as we see later on, the time is coming for the change.
With the Dungeon of Doom, you'll see, you know, Hogan starts dressing in black, you guys making him dark, you know, you slowly get more into that. You end up at one point shaving his mustache. Is that right. All Hulk's idea, or this is your idea of where you want Hulk to be?
The shaving of the mustache was, he was going to do that movie where he played Zeus, remember?
Yep.
He couldn't have a mustache because the movie didn't have him having a mustache. So he used it for an angle to get heat on us.
Makes sense. Very smart.
Yeah, he was very smart.
Him wearing black, your idea or his?
His idea, and let me tell you, that was, you picked up on something really cool, John. That was the night, I think, that it finally hit him that I was right. If you look back at that interview, Hulk is coming down with a black bandana, all in black, right? We're in Chicago, the building's booing him. Mm-hmm. And what's Mean Gene, what he says, you can hear the somber night tonight from the fans. He saved Hulk. They were booing him. He was saying the aura of the building was horror. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. As if something was going on that night. Yeah. Yep.
And he did an incredible job on thinking on his feet. And that night when I got to him, I said, what I told you all along is it's starting to make sense. And he said, you know, let me run it by, brother. You know, so he started to see, maybe for the first time, it hit him in the face that, boy, I could turn and maybe make a lot of money.
And as we move forward in 96, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash debut, Hogan's heel turn at Bash of the Beach, which we've talked about before. It's one of those things where it's like the Dungeon of Doom are now not, maybe if they were 1 and 1A with the Horsemen as the top heel group, it's like, well, now the NWO is 1 and everyone else falls in 2, 3, 4 behind them, right? So now the Dungeon of Doom aren't as powerful. The Hogan and the NWO is the top heel group.
Yeah, and the Dungeon was actually, went from going for Hogan to actually letting the NWO pick our bones. You know, the famous one we talked about in Orlando, right? They came down with the Horsemen against the Dungeon. Oh, they're here. Remember?
Yep.
We were in the back. Before that, we had a main event, the Dungeon, a four-way, the Dungeon against the Horsemen. And we drew a huge number. And they came down and picked each one of us off. You know, the NWO, and that was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And it was perfect to me, was they could come down and pick our bones when we've gone 10 or 15 minutes and two of us are hurt. You know, one of the Horsemen gets hurt, one of the Dungeon gets hurt, two other guys are in the ring. They come down and just lay all eight guys out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Basically dismantled, like you said, like dismantled the Dungeon. And the Dungeon would add guys like Big Bubba Rogers. I don't know if he really makes sense, but, you know, he would be in the Dungeon, but then he would join the NWO eventually. Conan would be in the Dungeon. I don't think he really fit that group, although, you know, he's a great wrestler and great charismatic, right? Do you think Conan fit?
No, Conan should have been on his own. Conan has got a the other thing about Conan was he brought the Hispanic audience with him. A lot of people don't give him credit for that. He brought, Carlos is half Cuban, half Puerto Rican, and wrestled. He was a huge star in Mexico. So he brought three of the factions of the Hispanics to us. And especially in, you know, Miami, that means a lot.
The guy I was forgetting, Hugh Morris, Bill DeMott, he actually fit the group when you brought him, yeah, right? I mean, he fit perfectly.
Yes. I met Bill in Japan, and I gave him a job. He was a big, impressive guy, could move, super strong. He could do anything. Bill was a wonderful performer.
I feel like underrated. A lot of people don't realize he, yeah, was a damn good wrestler, good athlete. Underrated.
Way underrated. I saw him in Japan. I was there the first time he tried a moonsault in the afternoon, and I couldn't believe he hit it. You know what I mean? We put a big pad out for him, a mat. It was like an amateur wrestling mat. We rolled it up into a tight circle, and he did the moonsault. I couldn't believe, you know. That's the first time I saw a guy that big do one.
Unbelievable. He had a great moonsault, for sure. No laughing matter, as he called it. A guy you brought up before definitely fit the Dungeon of Doom. Another awesome wrestler. The Barbarian, when he got put in the group, he fit in.
Oh, I mean, the Barbarian is the real deal, and that helped out. And especially having Ming and Barb together as a tag team or singles, I knew I was going to get an incredible match, either or. And they were so solid. It kind of gave us, again, a little bit more respectability.
Yeah, when you put Ming and Barbarian out there, it's you know, the Faces of Fear. I mean, they're an awesome tag team.
Yeah.
Definitely really good. Now, Max Muscle was in at one point. I just thought, like, that was weird. Kind of didn't make sense, right? I mean, it's like, kind of forcing him, I guess, trying to get him some TV time.
Yeah, he was a friend of Dallas's, and he got put in the group, and he wasn't there long. He was a very nice guy.
Very short time in was Braun the Leprechaun. He was thrown in there. Very cartoonish, very 80s.
Yeah.
And then a guy who I loved in the group and kind of wasn't there long enough was One Man Gang when he was in the group.
I love the One Man Gang. I mean, the gang is one of the nicest people you could ever meet. And the gang drew a lot of money. And again, a guy that went, drew money with Hogan, right, as a key.
Yep. Yep.
And he fit perfectly. Again, another one of the family members of Hogan's.
Yeah, another guy. Yep. Yeah. Now, somebody that got thrown in there female wise was Miss Jacqueline, who was going to be your partner against basically Benoit Woman. But what do you think about Miss Jackie? She's kind of doesn't fit the group in the sense of like the whole cater stuff, but she fits in there with you because she's tough, can work, and she's going to help you and get your back.
And what I was going to push for, and this is kind of me breaking my rules, but she was so tough, legitimately tough. I was going to put her over in a match.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I was going to put her over because if you notice that we were building up to it, I kept on saying, the only guy that can beat her is me. The only guy that can beat her is me. And I was going to have a split between her and me. It might not have been a match, but she was going to knock me out. And she probably could have done it in real life, you know.
She was definitely tough. Now, as the Dungeon of Doom, basically, you know, the Giant will join the NWO and then break off from the NWO, and then he's going to turn babyface and feud with Hogan, which was really well done. We'll get into that, of course, on a future episode. But like the Dungeon of Doom is losing members and it's kind of losing power. Eventually it becomes the First Family with Jimmy Hart, and he has Ming and Barbarian, and he has Knobs and Jerry Flynn. And of course, you know, he'll kind of still be there, but not be a top heel group. When you retire and lose your retirement match to Benoit 97, is that basically like Dungeon of Doom is over at that point? Basically, yeah. You're writing them off really as your retirement.
Right, and here's the thing. We got to where we needed to be. Hogan turned heel. There was no need for comedy anymore. We were stone cold. Don't mean to use that term, stone cold, but we were getting more and more serious as the weeks went on.
Now, the end of the Dungeon of Doom is just one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, we're going to move on. You still had the Horsemen. Obviously, the NWO was hot to trot, still 97, and even into 98 was still the definite biggest angle in wrestling for WCW. Now, as far as, you know, you retire, you're still booking, obviously. But if you think about this, it's like, where did the Dungeon of Doom come from? So you're just thinking of, okay, it's definitely because of Hogan, and it felt the need, and it worked because it got him to turn heel, got him to join the NWO. If you go back and you listen to Bischoff, you say, where did it come from? He was saying that there was some psychedelic drugs. I think he's joking, obviously, but he's saying there's some psychedelic drugs going on between you and Hogan, and that's where the Dungeon of Doom was formed. I know he's kind of joking, but it almost seems sounds legit.
It sounds legit. It sounds legit. I mean, I don't think, hopefully, if I was on a trip, I'd come up with something a little bit cleaner. But, you know, I think he did it in jest. But I look back at it now, and, you know, it's like I heard Terry Taylor say something just recently when someone said, he gave you the Red Rooster gimmick, meaning Vince. And he said, yeah, and that's what why people still remember me. Well, the Dungeon of Doom, as you said, all of a sudden, this number one wanted to hear about it. And I like to take credit for it all, but Hogan laid it out, and I kind of piecemealed it together and did it the best of my ability. So it worked.
Yeah. Just kind of a summary or like a brief overview. If I say Dungeon of Doom, what do you think of? I know you were saying now it's actually a little bit different than what you would have thought of it. Like, it kind of is not as remembered as badly as maybe it was before. What's the kind of final thought on the Dungeon of Doom?
My final thought was it did what I needed to do to get Hogan turned heel. So the end justified the means. And I think it hurt a lot of those guys, but none of those guys were Hulk Hogan. And nobody's going to draw the money he did.
And you're saying now fans are actually kind of, when they see you and talk about it, they actually kind of like it now rather than rip on it like they used to.
Yeah, when I used to go to a convention, people would kind of rip on it. Now, John, they're saying, when I was a kid, that was my favorite thing, so maybe it was a little bit of the reality-based wrestling was over the kids' heads, and they had still remembered Hogan for say your prayers, take your vitamins, and Hulkamania, that they went along with it until they got a little bit older and then got drifted off of the Dungeon of Doom and went to the NWO. But we had them watching.
That's literally me, probably in a nutshell, as a fan. Huge Hulkamaniac through the 80s. As the 90s came, you know, when he goes to WCW, almost kind of like, wow, I like this, you know, darker side of Hogan. You know what I mean? Like when he turns NWO. And then, of course, me and all my buddies obsessed with the NWO for years. And, you know, this sort of touches, but that is, I think that's like the crux of it. Like so many fans were like, we're sick of the, you know, yellow and red brother. We want to see something. And then when he turned, we loved it. I know a lot of fans were throwing some trash in the ring, but we were loving it as fans for sure.
Yeah, and I think that throwing the trash in the ring is great because that means it got heat and did what it was supposed to do. And he did it tremendously.
Yes, absolutely. Now, as far as some plugs, you can follow me on Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can follow me on Instagram at Two Man Power Trip as well. And you can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Of course, you go to Kevin Sullivan's Pro Wrestling Tees store. Just go to ProWrestlingTees.com and type in Kevin Sullivan. He's got a great store there. And then, of course, Double Hell T-shirts. Go to Double Hell T-shirts. Type it in on Google. You'll find it. You'll see them. They're on Twitter as well. They got some awesome Kevin Sullivan shirts. They have a great line. It's like, hey, complete line of shirts for Kevin. So right, Double Hell is the kind of the place to go for some great merchandise for you. Also, just want to mention, do you have any things going on as far as personal appearances? Anything coming up?
Not until the end of the month. I'm going to New York to do a virtual signing for a day, but I'll give you more information about that next week.
Awesome. Good stuff. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week and every week right here on Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. See you next week, folks.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother. College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and the family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.